black, proud, independent, determined, educated, resilient, compassionate, batty, funny, quirky, unique, creative, thoughtful, sincere, loyal, gutsy, vibrant, resourceful, imaginative, engaging, fabulous, awesome. Those are all words that describe me, the Brick City Brown Chick. Welcome to my podcast, What I Know Now. Thanks for listening. I'm feeling okay this morning. And you know, we're on the road to paradise. Here we go. Here we go. Welcome back, everyone, to What I Know Now. I am your host, Brick City Brown Chick, and this is episode 18. We're going to Johnstown, where? The opening lines in this episode are from the Talking Heads song, Road to Nowhere. And honestly, at times, that is what my college education felt like, the road to nowhere. So that is what I'm going to talk about today. In my last episode, Girls Just Hanging with Nuns, I talked about my experience going to a Catholic private all-girls high school, which was really not my idea. It was my parents' idea. And as much input as they had into where I went to high school, they did not decide where I went to college, although both of them had several and very strong opinions about where I should go. My mother went to North Carolina A&T, which is a huge college in North Carolina, and my father went to a college that was called at the time Fort Valley State, which is in Georgia, which I think now is Fort Valley University, part of the University of Georgia system. But at the time when he went in the 1950s, it was an independent black college. So both of them felt very strongly that I should go to what we would now call an HBCU, a historically black college or university. They thought it would be good for me after going to high school with a lot of white people and going to grade school with white and Hispanic people, that I'd be in an environment of black people in a positive situation where I could get to know my peers and sort of get the interactions in college that I did not get in high school or in grade school. And I understood that from both their perspectives. But at the end of the day, what they understood and what I understood was that I needed to go somewhere first and foremost that had my major, and not a lot of colleges did at that time, although more colleges did then than do now. And also, I needed to go somewhere that I thought I was going to be comfortable emotionally. Now, in order to set the stage for where I went to college, I have to take you back to where I was, and honestly, where my mother was at that time. My father died, as I've said several times, in February of my senior year of high school. So February, March timeframe back then was when you had put in your applications or were finalizing your final applications to the schools you were interested in and you were waiting to hear back. My father, I said last episode, had told me that his job was to keep me away from boys as long as possible, that that was his thing. He and I had a few conversations while he was in the hospital in January and early February of 1988, before he died, about college and where I was looking and what I was looking to major in and all those sorts of things. And he said at one point, he said, "So we're going to an all-women's college, aren't we?" And my first thought was, who is this we you speak of? I'll be the one going to college. That was my first thought. And then my next thought was, I took a big sigh and I looked at him and I said, "Okay, Dad, you're going to have to pardon my French on this particular statement," which, for those of you who don't know, that was a statement meant you were about to swear and you didn't swear around your parents. So I had to excuse myself ahead of time. And I said, "Dad, the only way I am going to an all-women's college is if hell freezes over tomorrow." I've spent 4 years with girls becoming women. I don't want to spend four more years with women becoming women. I just can't do it anymore. One of the things that high school taught me that I didn't talk about in the last episode was it really did give me an understanding of just how competitive women can be, how vicious, for lack of a better word, sometimes women can be. And I just didn't want to be in that environment anymore. Now, my mother was on the other side of this argument. My mother had a terrible fear, and I guess it wasn't unusual for women of her generation, but she was really scared that if I went to an all-women's college, that I would be a lesbian. That was her underlying fear. And I had to have several conversations with her and explain that that's really not how it works. And she shouldn't be worried about that, but I knew she still was. So my father, still trying to encourage this all-women's environment, kept talking about Spelman. Now, I think everybody knows, but if you don't, Spelman is a very prestigious, historically Black college, and it is a women's college in Georgia. And Morehouse College, which is a prestigious men's Black college, is literally almost across the street. So a lot of people who go to one or the other don't feel like they're being deprived of being around the opposite sex because their schools are so close. So when my father said, "You can go to Spelman and, you know, everything will be cool." And I said, "Yeah, Dad, I could go to Spelman, but I'm not going to Spelman." I was putting my foot down on that situation. And so they both knew that an all-women's college was out. One was happy about that, and one was not particularly happy about that. My mother still wanted me to go to a historically Black college. Most of those colleges are in the South. And when I say South, I don't mean like Maryland or Virginia. I mean the Deep South. They are in North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee. And I was not at all crazy about going to school in any of those places. I grew up in New Jersey, but both of my parents are from the Deep South. My mother is from North Carolina. My father was from Georgia. I'd spent a lot of summers and a lot of time in the Deep South. And by the time I was 18, I had taken enough history in school and had enough conversations with my parents to understand that the Deep South is not somewhere I wanted to be, and especially not to spend 4 years of my life in college. It was an environment that I wanted no part of. And that was hard for my mother to reconcile because she went to college in the Deep South. She went to college in North Carolina. But what I pointed out to her is, A, that's where she grew up. So that's what she knew. And also, B, she went to college in the 1950s before, you know, desegregation and what came after was really popular, before Black people had the opportunity, for the most part, to go to predominantly white institutions. So she had a very different perspective of going to college in the South than I did. I told her quite honestly that I did not think I would be comfortable in the South in that environment. And it was not something I wanted to spend my college years dealing with. Now I'm going to put a pin in that particular comment because that comes back around later. So I applied to several universities. I know kids these days apply to, you know, 50 or 60 or 75. I'm not saying that was not an option when I went to college. What I am saying is it never occurred to me to apply to that many schools. I think I might have applied to 10. And that was a heavy lift because back in those days, you had to write these essays about why you wanted to go there and what you planned to do with your life and what you thought you were going to get out of your education going to that particular school. So it was a lot of round and round and back and forth. So in the midst of all that, my father got very sick and ultimately died. So the latter half, I'd say, of my senior year of high school was coping with his death and not really being in the mindset to care about all the things that were coming up in my life that everybody else was looking forward to: prom, award ceremony, graduation, orientation for college, and getting ready to go off into this new phase of life. I thought very seriously about staying home after my father died. I really did not want to leave my mother alone. There used to be three people living in this house. Now all of a sudden she's lost her husband and her daughter's about to go away to school. So she would then be there by herself. I knew she could take care of herself. That was not the concern. My concern for her was more emotional, was how she was going to cope. And so I pretty much decided I was going to postpone going to school for a year, that I was going to go out and get a job and work for a year. And once things were more settled for both of us, then I could go to school. My mother, to her credit, made it very clear to me that that was not an option, that whatever school I was accepted into that I wanted to go to, she was going to make that happen from a financial perspective, and I was going to make it happen from the perspective of being the student. She did not want me to stay home. She realized she could not keep me from worrying about her. But what she said was, if I let you stay home and you don't go to school now, and you end up not going to school or changing your mind or doing something different, your father will haunt me for the rest of my life. You have to take care of you and learn how to do that and go out into the world and learn how to fend for yourself. And I cannot be what stands in the way of you doing that. And I give her all the credit in the world for that. I can't imagine how she felt because I don't have any children, but I just imagine that that had to be a very hard thing for her to decide to sort of, you know, fly little bird fly, to push me out into the world and say, no, you've got to get it together and figure it out for yourself. But that is what she did. And so ultimately, I did choose a university. I chose the University of Pittsburgh. And I was a journalism major, which refers back to what I said at the beginning of not a lot of schools had that major then, and even few of them have that now. I know a lot of people have this view of journalists today as, you know, fake news, and it's not a real job, and reporters don't really do things and all that, and that's a totally different conversation. But when I was in school, what I wanted to major in more than anything was creative writing, because I was a writer, I am a writer, that's where my passion is. But my mother, being the practical person that she was and always is, said, okay, that's great. How are you going to get a job with that? What are you going to do with it? And so the practical compromise we came to is that I would be a journalism major. And so that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a journalist. And when I was in school, there were certain schools that did that. University of Pittsburgh was one of those schools. I applied. I was accepted. But in my acceptance letter, I also received a letter that said, okay, we're happy to welcome you to the University of Pittsburgh family. But if you're going to major in journalism, we only offer that at our Johnstown campus. So you would have to go to University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown. Now, today, I know it's a big thing that most universities have satellite campuses. But back in the 80s, that was not as big of a deal. So I had no idea that the University of Pittsburgh had campuses other places. I later found out they had 4 other campuses. And they were all in these little towns in Pennsylvania that most people had never heard of. Of the other 4 campuses, Johnstown was actually the biggest. And I think today it still is. I went back maybe 15 years ago, and it is nothing like the school I went to. When I was there, there were 3,300 kids, college kids. About 80% of them were commuters, were kids who lived in the area and commuted to school. And then the other 20% of us were kids from out of town and out of state who lived on campus. So when I got that letter, I was like, okay, where the heck is Johnstown? And what is this about? So my mother and I made the trip from Newark, New Jersey to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which back in those days was not the easiest of trips to make. So we flew from Newark to Pittsburgh and then took this little cloud hopper plane that held 15 people from Pittsburgh to Johnstown, which is one of the scariest flights I've still ever been on in my entire life. And so we arrived there, and it's a beautiful campus. It's on a hilltop. It's on one of the highest mountains in western Pennsylvania. So it's super quiet. Well, it used to not be. There was nothing else around there. So you were literally out in the middle of nowhere. And that was fine with me. I was going to college for an education. I was not looking for, you know, Party Central or place for the cool kids. I was really looking for a nice environment where I could study and focus. And so that's what it was. And when we went, it was during, I guess, late spring classes. Winter semester had ended and people were there basically taking like summer school classes or whatever. And so a lot of the kids on campus we saw were the kids who lived out of the area or out of state. And a lot of those kids were Black. So my mother felt comfortable that this was a place where I would be comfortable as a Black person and that I could be myself. So she agreed that I could go there and that was all good. So that summer, I went to orientation. And literally probably 95-98% of the kids were white. And so I was terribly confused and talked to one of the administrators, and they said, oh, yes, most of the kids who go to school here are from small towns in western Pennsylvania, and most of those towns are white. So the black students that go here are primarily students from Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. You are one of a handful of students that will be from out of state and also will be a minority. So just a heads up. So I had to sort of work through that and kind of decide if that was something I could actually deal with or not. So I went back home and told my mother, and she said, okay, here's my suggestion. Why don't you go for a year? You see what it's like, you see what it's about, and if it's not something you like, if you're not comfortable being there, then you can transfer. You can go somewhere else. We'll figure it out. Okay, so off I went to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, with my car full of stuff to move into a dorm. It was a rude awakening, shall we say. When I said earlier I was going to put a pin in the comment that I didn't want to go to school in the South, here's where that comes into play. I did not know or understand as an 18-year-old girl that going to college in Western Pennsylvania as a black person was the equivalent of going to school in the South. At that time, Western Pennsylvania was still very rural, still very divided along racial lines, and still very, I guess, judgmental is the best word I can use. And so my first few months of college were really rough from the perspective of, you know, being stared at and people making comments and asking me if I was from Philly. And I, at that point in my life, I'd never been to Philadelphia. So it's like, what is the deal with Philly? I've never been there. I'm from New Jersey. I don't know what your deal is. And at that time, there was also a lot of resentment from people around affirmative action. So people would flat out ask me, oh, did you get in here because of affirmative action or whatever nonsense? And it was just so exhausting and frustrating. And my mother and I had this standing conversation every Sunday. And I would just be like, these people are crazy. I am so annoyed. I am so fed up. I'm gonna get into a fight with somebody. And my mother was like, don't lose your cool. Don't let people take you out of yourself. Remember, it's not what you're called, it's what you answer to, which is something that's always stuck with me. And she's like, they don't matter. You are there to get an education, and the hell with them. That's essentially what she said. And so I really did have to pull back and channel that conversation several times over that semester. When the semester started, I remember very distinctly going to two discussions. And the first discussion was for everybody. It was a general conversation about what to expect from college. And, you know, now that you're away from your parents, here's what you're going to be responsible for. You got to figure out your class schedule and your homework and your laundry and getting to the cafeteria. All these things that your parents used to take care of for you are now your responsibility. And it is not our job as the administration to hold your hands through it. You're here to figure it out. So talk to some upperclassmen, make some friends, get to know some people who already know how to do some of this stuff, because we're not going to do it for you. okay, that was not a surprising conversation, but the tenor and tone of it was enlightening. And the big comment at the end of that conversation was, a lot of you are not going to make it through this process. And what they meant was, not that you're not going to make it here at this university, but you're just going to make it, period. College is not for everybody. College is not for all of you. And the only way you're going to figure that out is to go through it. And the administrator said, you know, look at the person on your left and the person on your right. One of those people will not complete this process. One of those people will not graduate with you. And that's just fact. And so that was kind of like, oh boy, this is what I got myself into. I'm 6 hours away from my mother, from my family, from any kind of support system I could possibly have. This is what I thought was a good idea. So I really did start to second guess my decision. And then the other conversation that I remember to this day is University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown. I don't know if they still do, but when I went there, there was an organization called BAS, the Black Action Society. Now, to white people, that sounded really militant and really crazy. And like, what are these people? Are these the new Black Panthers? Okay, what it really was a support group for the 80 or so of us out of the 3,300 students that went to this school who were Black. So we would meet every couple of weeks and sit around and talk about any issues we had, any confrontations we had with people. And Black Action Society was super important for those of us who were freshmen because we had no idea. So we looked to the upperclassmen to help us navigate through the insanity. And the very first meeting I went to, the upperclassmen told us, listen, there are certain things you need to understand about where you are. And one of the things you need to understand is that the county headquarters, whatever they call it, for the Ku Klux Klan is two towns over. So just because we're not in the South doesn't mean this is always a safe place to be as a Black person. So if you're going to go out at night off campus, make sure you do the buddy system. Don't go by yourself. If you're off campus, or even if you're on campus and something happens to you where you need emergency services and you need to go to a hospital, make sure they take you to the county hospital and not to the hospital two towns over. Because if they take you there, you might not come back. And they were trying to scare us. They really were. And they did. Mission accomplished. Because for the 4 years I was in this school, there were things I would not do. There were places I would not go. I always made sure when I left campus that I left campus with someone. It was a very scary realization that, oh, I chose not to go to school in the South because this is not what I wanted to deal with. But hey, welcome to Western Pennsylvania. You get to deal with it anyway. So that was a super stressful part of college. I would say the least stressful part of college to me was my actual education. Going to classes, picking my classes, you know, taking my midterms and my tests. I was a good student. I've always been a good student. So the university part, the learning part was new, was interesting, was a lot, but it was not the heavy lift. The heavy lift was really the social part of college. Did the social part get easier over time? Kinda. I finished my freshman year and rejoiced and was so happy. And my mother said, okay, are you going to transfer? Are you going to go somewhere else? And after my first year, I thought, nah, I'm going to do another year and then we'll talk about it again. And I went through my sophomore year, and my sophomore year was a lot more turbulent socially than my freshman year was. And I didn't think that was possible. And that was not even a racial issue. I had roommate issues, which a lot of people have. I had issues with my roommate's boyfriend. Yeah, also not news for college people. And so there was just a lot of personal turmoil sophomore year, but the racial aspect of the issues, even though they remained, were not as pronounced. And that might possibly have been because I was now a sophomore. I wasn't a freshman. I wasn't green. I wasn't new. I knew what to expect. I knew what I could do, what I should do, what I shouldn't do, and what I couldn't do. I knew all those things. And it was always important to me as I became an upperclassman to really help the younger students, the new students, the freshmen. We had a few people who would transfer in, and transfer students of color were always the panicked ones and always the ones like, how do you deal with this place? This is insane. I cannot believe that at the time, this kind of stuff still goes on in America in 1989, in 1990, in 1991. And so it was always important to me to be able to talk to those students, let them know I was available because I had been where they were. What happened a lot over the course of my time in college is that a lot of people left. A lot of the Black students would get through a year or sometimes just a semester and say, I can't deal with this nonsense and I won't deal with it and I'm out. I'm from Philadelphia. I'm going to transfer to Trinity, or I'm going to transfer to Drexel, or I'm going to go to college in another state, but I'm not staying to put up with this. After my sophomore year, I really did give a lot of thought to leaving, because I was so frustrated and so fed up with just trying to exist as a Black person in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. One of the things I always tell people who say, I don't understand why Black people still make such a big deal about being a Black person. And what I say is, until you wake up as a Black person, you will never understand it. You will never understand that as soon as you get out of bed and your feet hit the floor, yeah, as far as America is concerned, you're Black. That's the first thing they see. And sometimes that's the only thing they see. And consequently, they make assumptions about you and who you are based solely on this. And that's something white people will never understand because they will never actually go through it. And so I thought seriously about leaving. One of my political science professors, I was a political science minor, talked me into applying to a program where I could spend a semester at American University in Washington, D.C., which is an amazing, prestigious university. And I was selected out of thousands and thousands of students who applied for this program. They took 30 students every semester, and I was accepted because of my grades and extracurricular activities and my interest in politics, all those things. And so when my junior year started, I got to go to Washington, D.C. for that semester instead of back to Johnstown. And that helped me in so many ways. It helped me see the wider world and understand that I was always going to be judged as a Black woman, but not as severely and not as narrowly as I was in this little town in Pennsylvania. And it really did help me keep my sanity. And by the time that semester was over, I was ready to power through and get it done because I only had a year and a half left at that point. So I really was ready to say, okay, you know what? This little town and these closed-minded people are not going to beat me. I'm going to kick ass and take names and get my degree. And that's what I did. Even though my very last semester of college, I was about to graduate, I was about to be done, I got the chicken pox, which is the most hysterical thing that could have happened to me as a college senior. It took the school nurse probably 20 minutes when I went there about why I was itching and what all these spots were to convince me that I had chicken pox, because I was like, chicken pox is a children's disease. I am 21 years old. What are you saying? And she was like, I'm sorry, but you have chicken pox. She's like, you've never had them, have you? I was like, no. She's like, okay, congratulations, you have chicken pox. I was like, how is that even possible? And she said, well, back in the fall, somebody went home. Their five-year-old niece or nephew had the chicken pox, and this student had never had it, so they didn't get it. They did bring the virus back to campus, so they never got sick, but they brought the virus back. And since then, people have been getting chicken pox left and right. Congratulations, you're now on that list. So I was laid up in bed for like 2 weeks. One of the things about chicken pox that they don't tell you as a kid, that you find out as an adult, if you're lucky, is that the older you are, the worse chicken pox are. So not only was I covered in itchy spots, but I was running 102 fever. And I had chicken pox everywhere. They were on my tongue, in my nose, on my scalp. It was a miserable, miserable exercise. And once I sufficiently recovered, I went to the dean's office. And by that point, because the school was so small, even the dean knew I had chicken pox. And he said, oh, are you feeling better? I heard you had chicken pox. And I was like, I had chicken pox. I was taking 22 credits because I wanted to be done. I did not want to be a five-year student, four-and-a-half-year student. I didn't want to do any of that. It was 4 years. I wanted to be out and done. And so the dean said, okay, well, you already have enough credits to graduate. Right now, you're taking a couple of major classes, like a gym and a couple other things. And I said, yeah, that's what I'm taking. I need to drop two classes. Like, I was taking a Spanish 4 class. I don't know why I was insane enough to do that anyway. Foreign languages was never my thing. I was lost in that class beforehand. So after the chicken pox, it was insane. And I wanted to drop some other class. And the dean was like, okay, no problem. You'll still be carrying 16 or 17 credits. You'll still be a full-time student. You got half a semester left. Done. You never met anybody who was so happy to be able to say they were taking 17 credits in your life. But I finished it. I got it done. I got to graduation. And I had told my mother various and sundry stories over my last couple of years, but I had cut down significantly on what I shared with her because I really did not want her to worry as much about me. I didn't want her being freaked out that something was going to happen to me. So I had cut down on a lot of the stories. And when I graduated, there were, I think, 650 of us that graduated that year. 5 of us were Black. And so after the ceremony, my mother pulled me aside, like after I'd talked to my friends and everybody, and she's like, where are all the Black people? And I said, what Black people? I'm sorry, Mom. I don't know what you're talking about. She said, like all the students I saw when I came here 4 years ago. And that's when I remembered, oh, yeah, I didn't explain that to her. So I told her, about how people would transfer and leave because of their frustration and the nonsense and the comments. And she was just blown away at that point that I had survived this and had come out on the other side. And so what I know now that I didn't know at 18 when I went to college is I am a lot tougher and stronger and more resilient than I thought I could be. When I went to college at 18, having just lost my father, I honestly felt broken. That's the best word I can use. I knew I needed to go to college and get an education if I was going to get a good job and I was going to figure it out. But I felt broken and dejected and alone. And then all of a sudden, I was 6 hours from home in this not really friendly to me environment. And I wasn't sure I could do it, but I did. And that gave me the confidence to do many other things in my life that I wasn't sure I could do, including this podcast. So, University of Pittsburgh, Johnstown, thank you for making me a tough cookie and being able to handle things. And that is what I know now. I want to thank everybody for joining me today. Beginning next week, I am going to be doing a series of episodes about my love for music, which is a huge thing in my life. So I hope you will join me for those. You can get this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, anywhere you get podcasts, you can pick up What I Know Now. If you would like to see this podcast as well as listen to it, you can go to YouTube, type in Brick City Brown Chick. You will get a cartoon version of me with glasses and a huge afro. And so you'll be able to see as well as hear the podcast. Thanks again, everybody, for joining me. And I look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye.